When you flip on the light switch, most people don't think of what it takes to bring that electricity into your room.
It's kind of like magic. The power plants just say, "Let there be light."
If only it were that simple.
And where we get our energy is something we've been worried about since at least the energy crisis of the 1970s.
We must change if we're going to have the energy we need. If we want new oil, we've got to look in new places. We must demand more efficient engines for our cars. We must push forward, at whatever cost, the development of new energy resources.
Turns out, Utah lawmakers are super duper thinking about it. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. This episode of State Street is all about that big energy week.
You know, she's not kidding. House and Senate leadership literally dubbed last week Energy Week at the Capitol.
The topic isn't exactly flashy.
Let's see what she did there.
But getting it wrong could have big implications for the environment and your bank account.
Utah's official approach to energy policy is what it calls all of the above.
That means anything and everything is on the table.
Solar, geothermal, coal, wind, hydropower, natural gas, oil, nuclear.
A nice charcuterie board filled with options.
Utah Republicans aren't necessarily hostile towards solar or wind, but they're not going to ditch traditional fossil fuels either. GOP leaders in the House and Senate have said a transition to renewable energy is coming. What concerns them is how fast it's happening.
Basically, there's a worry on the Republican side of the aisle that renewable sources of energy like wind and solar aren't reliable enough yet to take the place of fossil fuels like coal and natural gas.
And how much energy Utah produces is one of the main focus points this year. They're calling it Utah's energy independence.
Republican leaders want Utah to produce more energy than it consumes.
That has some lawmakers super motivated, like Speaker of the House, Mike Schultz.
I don't want to rely on other parts of the world or other states to provide the energy for our citizens. We need to be self-sustaining, especially in the world that we're living in and the chaos that we're seeing going on.
They want Utah to produce enough power so no one will worry, will those lights turn on when they reach for that switch? In fact, they want to make sure they're making so much power that they can keep selling it to other states. To get a little more clarity on what energy independence actually entails, I turned to University of Wyoming economics professor Rob Godby. But even he said, it gets a little squishy.
Energy independence means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. If you go inward and you start talking about states being energy independent, of course it's possible. But the question is, at what cost? You've got energy consuming states and you have energy producing states. Utah kind of sits right in the middle of that. They produce energy, but they also have a major center where they demand electricity. It's probably more difficult for Utah to be self-sufficient. It's a nice slogan, but it's really not likely to happen because people wouldn't want to pay the cost for that. It's just much cheaper to import cheap energy when it's available from wherever it's available. Instead of using more expensive energy locally.
All right, this is kind of the whole point. So listen up. If we're only getting energy from Utah, there will be times that it won't be the cheapest option. This is the dilemma. We don't want to be reliant on other people, but sometimes that will make energy more expensive for Utah.
Democratic Senator Nate Bluin, who works in renewable energy, agrees with Godby's take that there's no guarantee Utah energy will be the cheapest option for Utah consumers.
That's not how the market works. It just isn't. We transact with other states. We look at the energy sources that are cheapest. Our utilities do all the procurement there and look at hydropower up in the Northwest. And when that's cheap, they'll rely on that. And when the wind is blowing on the coast out in Washington or Oregon, they'll rely on that.
So let's break down how Republicans envision this energy independent future actually happening. Like, what steps do we need to take to reach that lofty goal?
And I'm so glad you brought that up. We'll get to that after we take a quick break. You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Caroline Ballard, State Street's executive producer. We know that our show's listeners are smart and curious, and we want to harness that power. Do you have a question that's been keeping you up at night about how the legislature works? We're also interested in what issues are most important to you this session. Let us know at kubr.org/statestreet. We may tackle your question in future reporting.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. We left off with an important question. What steps is the legislature taking to achieve its goal of Utah energy independence?
Sick.
So there has been a suite of bills proposed this legislative session. They do everything from addressing the state's overall energy policy to improving infrastructure and exploring clean energy.
The bills that have been getting the most attention are related to Utah's coal industry. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency wants cleaner emission standards, which are prompting more coal-fired plants to close across the country. But Utah Republicans want to keep coal-fired power plants alive, at least for now. Here's what Speaker Schultz had to say about that.
The thing that's really concerning to me is that they've set out to close our power plants, our coal-fired power plants, without another option for the citizens of the state. And so we have to work to find what those options are, and there needs to be a transition, but it's got to be a responsible transition. I'm not going to let Utah become one of these parts of the country or the world where you have to turn your thermostat to a certain 80 degrees during the day, during the summer, because there's not enough power.
Schultz is not just worried about energy, but also the jobs the plants provide and the communities they support. This bill, called Electrical Energy Amendments, essentially gives the state power to prevent a coal power plant from closing early because of federal regulations like those EPA emission standards. And if it does, it has to be replaced by a facility of equal power.
What kind of power would that be?
Well, anything. Remember that all the above approach?
Solar. Geothermal. Wind.
We should say that there are some issues people have raised with this way of thinking. The biggest problem? Cost. In simple terms, let's look at Rocky Mountain Power and its parent company, Pacific Corp. While Rocky Mountain Power isn't the only power provider in Utah, the vast majority of Utah customers get their power from the Rocky Mountain Power system.
The Greater Pacific Corp system is actually a collection of six states: Oregon, Washington, California, Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah. As Senator Bluin explained, having a wealth of power options from different places actually helps keep costs lower, which means you pay the lowest price possible to keep the lights on.
The hang-up is if one resource, coal in this case, gets all the love.
Michelle Beck is the director of the Utah Office of Consumer Services, which is a state agency. She spoke at a committee hearing for this bill. Her job is to advocate for ratepayers like you and me. Here's what she had to say.
I think we're really getting close, but we're not quite there. And if we don't get it right, it will cause rates to increase.
But how exactly could rates increase? Here's Beck again.
If any one state puts forward any kind of restrictions or policy that makes us deviate from that least cost least risk, so we have to take the next a higher cost resource, that doesn't just kind of raise rates a little bit, but the entire differential, the entire increased cost from that policy get assigned to Utah.
In other words, if we're pushing coal even when it's not the cheapest option in the network, we're all paying more money.
Utah's neighbor, Wyoming, has tried to prop up its declining coal industry.
Those results have been mixed at best.
It's important to note that this is not just big government versus fossil fuels. The market drives these decisions, too.
In simple terms, when the wind is blowing or the sun is shining, there's a good chance wind and solar power will be cheaper than coal.
Godby says the energy market is already looking at less expensive forms of energy.
the market can be, you know, a cruel master. Regardless of regulation, it's inevitable that the power sector will be moving towards the cheapest ways to provide power, especially in the West, because regulated utilities are required to produce power at the cheapest, in the cheapest possible way to minimize cost to their customers.
Okay, so there's a lot of moving parts to the energy debate. And while Republicans are mostly dominating the conversation, Democrats have their own thoughts too.
Democratic Senator Nate Bluhin naturally has opinions on how to go about energy production in Utah.
I think we all want the same things. We all want reliable energy. We want affordable energy. And I certainly want clean energy as well. And I think that is that's where the market is headed. And right now, there's so much support to do that. And it's a shame to see us not taking a part in that.
Oof, that was a lot of info on energy.
But it's important to know, and the decisions leaders make in this arena, whether it be to double down on coal or invest in more renewable energy, Utah's pocketbooks could be impacted. The question is, how much?
Renewable energy is only becoming cheaper, and the reliance on coal is dwindling. Utah lawmakers will have a really hard time if they attempt to end run federal regulations like emission standards, fight the market, and still have residents pay the same price they are now.
The impacts of these choices don't stop with how much money goes from your bank account to the power company each month either. It will also have an impact on Utah's quality of life too, like what jobs can be created, what jobs will the state lose when coal plants do eventually shut down, and what effect do they have on the greater environment.
And there are big things at stake if Utah gets it wrong. We'll be diving into those environmental issues next week.
We heard from lots of you that you want to know about things like air quality and the future of the Great Salt Lake. Thanks for sending those in, and keep letting us know what's on your mind and what you're curious about. Head to KUER.org, where we have a swanky new comment box on our homepage.
That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. A big shout out to those who make State Street possible. Caroline Ballard is our executive producer. Production help comes from David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark.
And thank you to our digital team, Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg. And thanks to KUER Midday host Bob Nelson for those smooth pipes.
If you want even more politics content, subscribe to our newsletter. That's also at our website.
Bye-bye till next week.
Sick. What does mine say? Sweet. What does mine say?
Tubular.
From KUER.